Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
What's going on, everyone? Jurassic Views, Courtney Wright, Bryce Diamond, on a Sunday, a cooler Sunday than what we've had in this a bit bizarre weather pattern. I know Canadians love to talk about weather, and we're going to talk about the weather for just a second, because this past week went from like 40 with the Humidex to hail to comfort cottage weather. Courtney, I know you're not in Ottawa, but we've both experienced a weird week of weather. How are you doing? What was the weirdest thing that you might have saw or experienced where you are weather-wise?
Ooh, interesting question. I feel like, yeah, I'm in the GTA right on Lake Simcoe, so I'm getting a lot of weird weather patterns here too. I haven't gone from getting like sunshine and then hail the size of golf balls in the same day like you guys there. But it's been very odd. It was 38 degrees yesterday. And then when I woke up this morning, I was shivering. Like it was freezing cold. And it's a weird day. When I look out the window ahead of me, I can see the sun. And when I look out the window to my left, it is very dark and dreary and very still.
Okay.
One weird weather-related thing that happened to me about a week and a half ago is that a racing pigeon was traveling over my yard and got carried away by a wind current. And this racing pigeon ended up falling in my yard. And he has been here for the last 11 days. Oh. I didn't know that racing pigeons were a thing, but right. I learned a lot from my local wildlife rescue centers and online Facebook pages and stuff. But I've had this racing pigeon that apparently when there's weird shifts in weather patterns, storms coming and stuff like that, they'll park themselves and wait until the weather sorts itself out before they take off. But he's been in my yard for 11 days, and I don't know if he knows more than we do about the weather and what's to come, but he's just kind of been hanging, and I put food out for him, and I'm kind of calling him my foster pet at this point.
Have you invited any birders to show up in your backyard to check out this racing pigeon?
I have, actually. My neighbor down the street, his name is Irving, and he is a retired but now full-time bird watcher, and he bird goes on like he actually travels to other continents and things like that on bird watching tours. So he has been extremely helpful as a resource in terms of like, what do I feed it, what do I do with it, how do I care for this creature that has now found a temporary home in my yard. So
dang.
So if you asked me in the spring how I thought I was going to spend my summer, fostering a racing pigeon would probably not have been at the forefront of my mind, but you know what, here we are.
And you know, like the end of June, beginning of July, it is a bit of a, you know, explosion of drama similar to weather patterns. And sometimes you find a player that surprises you, a player that is like a unicorn. I don't know if racing pigeons are the same as unicorns and how unique they are, but talk to me about Victor Wembanyama and if you've been able to see any of him playing Summer League, or if you saw his incident with Britney Spears that happened in Las Vegas. Either one is fine.
I think that was one thing that kind of unified the world. Like, even if you're not a basketball fan, you now know who Wemby is. And if you are not a fan of pop music and have been living under a rock for the last 30 years, you definitely know who Britney Spears is now. What a random unifying. Just so weird. But yeah, you know what? I watched a little bit of Summer League. I was not as invested this year as I normally am. I think partially I was bitter because last year the Raptors dominated Summer League and I was so pumped for the season. And then, you know, it went the way that it went. But I did watch him. I don't get too involved in the Summer League conversation. It's like, if a guy has a good game, it's like, oh my God, he's the next LeBron. He's the next Kobe. And if a guy has a bad game, it's like, oh my God, horrible. Just worst decision. Why did we draft this guy? I feel like there's a lot of that that goes on. So I know he didn't play remarkably well. And he also only played a couple games. And I think that makes sense. I think it makes sense, especially looking at last year during Summer League with Chet Holmgren, who is such a similar body type, similar build. They played him a lot of minutes at Summer League, and then it cost him the whole season, right? So I don't know if that was a factor for the Spurs. But, I mean, I'm very encouraged to watch him. It was hilarious to me on draft night seeing how pumped he was not to go to the Rockets. And I'm sure we'll talk about the Rockets later on, but it's nice. Like, I mean, if you're a young man like that with all this potential, all of the eyes all around the globe on you, like, what better team other than the Raptors to get drafted to than the Spurs? So I'm pumped. I mean, I'm not going to be upset if he doesn't get 30 points a night every night and 15 blocks and rebounds. You know, it's just, I'm just going to watch him be a young man having fun playing basketball and not put more expectation on him than he already has.
Yeah. Now, when he got drafted to the Spurs last month, of course, Zai and I had a freestyle pod while the draft was happening. And we had some comments about him going to San Antonio and even Greg Popovich, the legend himself. What are your thoughts, just as a tangent about the Spurs, what are your thoughts about Pop continuing to coach now as he nears his 80s?
I mean, look at the guys who run the world. you know what? Obviously, there is always that question of when is he going to announce his retirement? And I guess, what is he waiting for? Is he waiting until he wins another chip? Is he, like, what will it take for him to say, okay, my career has reached every height that I've wanted it to, and now this is enough for me? So I think he's what, like 73, 74?
Is he that young?
He's got another 20 years in him. Come on. Oh, that's actually a fair question. You know, I mean, it's kind of in any other context, yes, he'd be at that age of like, oh my God, what the hell is he waiting for? But I don't know. I mean, if I look at him just objectively in terms of his performance as a professional, the work that he does, obviously we don't know what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But I feel like if we're just looking at every head coach in the league, I don't see his age as being a negative factor. Obviously it contributes to the wealth of experience and knowledge he has. At the same time, he seems to be fairly adaptable. Like, there's a lot of folks who get set in their ways and they say, well, I've done it this way for the last several decades and it works, right? But he seems to be adaptable, flexible. So as long as he's willing to keep having that, I guess, more youthful mentality, I say let the guy coach. And obviously, if he starts showing signs that he's not equipped to do so, that's another conversation. But
right.
I don't know. I say go for it. What's the harm? He doesn't. I don't know. Now I just Googled it. He is 74.
74.
But I don't know. I think he carries himself with a youthful composure and an open mind and heart. And those are the things that to me I would look for in leadership more than just the age. But what do you think?
I mean, I think most people who do well financially in life should step away from their jobs at 65 at a maximum, at the highest age, because, like, A, there's lots of younger people looking for jobs and opportunities. And B, like, you've had a good run, you know, like you've been in your job or in a career kind of position for 4 decades. I feel like, or, you know, more than 4 decades perhaps, but like, I feel like that's a good long time. And, you know, there's other things that you could get up to that you don't have to make money for. And I'm not saying that Pop is financially motivated the way maybe another coach would be who's younger than him or has a different set of needs. But I think there's so many good, talented people who are looking for an opportunity. In this case, Greg Popovich's case, Becky Hammond, who I think probably would have been doing a fine job after Popovich, you know, said farewell after the bubble. So, I mean, that's kind of my way of looking in general to people's careers once they hit 65. But I think Pop specifically, here you were, you know, you pride yourself on certain values. One of those being, you know, someone who wants to see women empowered, and you're actually holding a woman who you've trained back because you continue to hold the position that she could walk into. And let's be honest, in her case, and I realize this is another tangent upon a tangent, but in her case, I feel like to be a pioneer is really hard in a place that doesn't know you. And San Antonio knows her both as a franchise and a city. And I just thought that was a miss from Popovich, who's, you know, who's done a great job. Everyone loves him. I have a lot of love and respect for who Pop is and what he's done. But that was one thing I was like, come on, man, you don't need this. And you know, that's my thought. That's my thought on Pop.
No, that's fair enough. I have like 17 follow-up questions that, again, clearly need to record another episode just focusing on this. I'm like, so Becky was pretty clear that she doesn't see the NBA as being superior to the WNBA. And I don't know if you watched the Las Vegas Aces last season, but I feel like she did okay for herself in her first season as head coach of the Aces. Absolutely. So do you feel like, if things had played out differently coming out of the bubble, and if she was offered the head coach position with the Spurs, do you think she'd be coaching the Spurs right now? Or would she have still gone to the Aces?
I think if she had started coaching in 2021, I guess after the bubble would have been like the 2020 season, and she had 2 years under her belt as a head coach of the Spurs. I think she might have thought, you know, this franchise, this team right now is currently in a rebuild situation. It's going to take some time or a unicorn from France to help turn the ship here quickly. You know, maybe I am better off to going to another place, or, you know, putting my hands to the game with the W and going to the Las Vegas Aces. It's possible. I don't know. I mean, obviously, anytime you pioneer something, there's going to be greater scrutiny, and I think unmerited, unwarranted. But I think it just seemed like the next good step for both the NBA and for Popovich. And because there will be a woman coach in the NBA. Oh. There's going to be a head coach who is a woman. There's just too many good assistant coaches already in the league. And I think when they get that chance, you know, it'll be great. But there's going to come scrutiny. I just thought coming out of the bubble with everything that the players were trying to do around justice and social issues and endeavors. I just thought that was a good next step, and I feel like they missed that. And I think Becky's really a coach. Like, I think she can do a great job at that level. But you know what? Maybe she's happier. Maybe she's more content. You know, coaching in the W. Maybe she doesn't want. I don't know. Maybe she doesn't want the spotlight in the same way that the NBA has it. Knowing that the WNBA plays in the summer, which is more of like a time where people are looking at other things. And, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I do. Even myself, I have to admit, I haven't been as faithful as a WNBA fan as I normally am. A lot of it just comes down to scheduling. Like, there's been so many games at like 9 o'clock in the morning where I know it's summer, but I'm still working, right? Like, it's if you're trying to avoid the spotlight, yeah, unfortunately, it seems like coaching in the WNBA is a good avenue to take. You have inspired me. I was just thinking of Cox, and I was trying to figure out if he was older than Coach K, who obviously has announced his retirement last year.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing Coach K is 76, so he would have been Pop's age when he announced his retirement.
Right.
And even with Coach K, it was obviously one of those things that we knew was coming eventually, but I still found myself surprised by it. But I think it was the right move for him at the right time. So, yeah, I will await Pop's retirement announcement, and I'll look to you. yeah, it's kind of, I don't know. Now you've got me thinking of Nick Nurse here, right, who obviously is known with the Raptors. And like a coach like Pop's, he doesn't have a jersey that you can retire. Like, how do you honor the legacy of someone like that who has brought so much to an organization and a city? And I'm thinking of that both in terms of Pops, obviously, but then just with Nick Nurse, too, where obviously he was the first coach to bring us a championship. He, even though he's not even Canadian, I consider him an honorary Canadian at this point. He was obviously Team Canada's head coach. So, yeah, I look at guys like him and like Pops, and like, how do you fully honor the complex legacies of people like this?
Yeah. Well, as we're talking, I'm wearing an Arsenal jersey, and the most successful Arsenal manager in the history of the club was Arsene Wenger. He was the coach for over 20 years. He won basically every title except the Champions League, where he led his team to the finals in 2006. And Arsenal mutually agreed on them going separate ways. And so he was no longer the manager in 2017. But just this week, outside of the Emirates Stadium, which is where Arsenal plays in North London, they honored, gave a tribute to him by erecting a statue of Arsene Wenger outside of the Emirates Stadium. So I think that was like one way that you can honor a coach is through a statue, obviously, in certain places outside of stadiums. Like, I know the United Center in Chicago, there's a statue of Michael Jordan. I think outside of the Mavericks stadium, Dallas Mavericks, there's a Dirk Nowitzki statue. And, you know, other people have these as well. So I think Greg Popovich could have a statue. I'm sure they could retire maybe not his number, but they could like have a banner up in the rafters as well. I don't know. What do you think?
I like that idea. I was hoping you'd have an answer for it, because I realized as the question left my mouth that if you point it back at me, I have no idea what I would say.
Now, you're suggesting that Nick Nurse did a statue outside of...
No. If we're getting a statue, it's Kyle Lowry.
Absolutely.
I will die on that hill. Okay. Nick, obviously, he's... I think if we recorded this a couple months ago, I probably would have been a bit more harsh and maybe a bit more less forgiving, I would say, towards Nick. But now that I've had time to reflect, I mean, I'm not saying he's not deserving of a statue, but I think if we're getting a statue, it's got to be Kyle. But yeah, we should honor Nick's complicated legacy.
Now, when you... It wasn't a surprise. We knew this was very much a possibility. But when he was released by the team. What were your initial thoughts? Take me through some of those rougher edges.
I think when the news broke and I got the alert from Twitter, it at that moment in time, the first thought was good riddance. Thank God. Yeah. And a lot of cursing and swearing and other things. But it was just kind of like, you know what? Great. Be gone. Move along. You don't want to be here. We don't want you here. It was like a tough, nasty breakup, you know?
Like bye Felicia kind of moment?
Bye Felicia. Go on, get, you know? Fully, I would like, yeah, don't let the door kick you on the way out. So, I was bitter. I mean, I was thinking of Fred VanVleet's knees. I was thinking of the fact that Fred and Pascal led most players in the league in minutes played this season, and for what? I look at all of our bench players who never got minutes with our team and then got traded and then went on to thrive. Yuta Watanabe comes to mind, of course, realizing he could shoot a three, but because Nick never played him, we didn't get to see that side of him. So I think a lot of it was positive, like, hey, maybe now some of our guys are actually going to get some minutes. Fred's going to get a break. Pascal's going to get some rest. They're going to get some help. OG's finally going to be able to lead the team and play a more active role. And I still do have a lot of those thoughts, but I think a lot of it came from a very frustrated, negative, tired mindset towards him. And I think it really hurt for me also just as a Canadian sports fan in general, way beyond the Raptors, the fact that he also stepped down from leading our senior men's Canada basketball team. That kind of hurt because he kept talking about how he's still fully committed to Canada and to Toronto and the GTA, and this is his community and his home and everything. And he said that, and then meanwhile his actions did the exact opposite. So there was more feelings have come from that, but that's kind of, those were my initial thoughts, was a lot of happiness.
I was pretty disappointed on that side. Like, if you have a job and your job isn't, you know, it's hit a moment where it makes sense for all parties, including yourself, to walk away and get a new environment, get a new setting, be around, you know, different coworkers. And I can totally understand that. You know, I've had some job changes in my life too. But when you are early in a job and you've said, this job that I have with this one group doesn't affect the other group, and you've asked one group who apparently aren't affected by you leaving the other job, you've asked them to commit for 3.5 years, and then you bounce. Now I have an issue. And that one stung actually a lot more than the Raptors for me.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I hate that we share those same feelings, but I do appreciate the solidarity and knowing I'm not alone. Like, it just felt like a slap in the face to all of Canada. I don't answer, excuse, whatever you want to call it. But people, if I ran into them on the sidewalk, what would I smile? Would I be happy? Would I cuss them out? Like, I truly don't know. I guess it would depend on my mindset that day. But I'm like, I want to believe I'd shake his hand and thank him for.
Interesting. Last Nick Nurse question, since we're on the topic. He goes, we expect that. He does what he does with the national team program. We'll put all that aside. How did you feel about him signing with probably the second most hated team, the Philadelphia 76ers?
I mean, it's kind of how I felt when I saw that Delano Banton went to the Celtics of all time. Painful. Very painful. But I mean, I did laugh out loud just thinking of him coaching Joel Embiid. Even now, I have a smile on my face. I know you can't see it, but it does bring me a lot of selfish joy. Just thinking of him coaching Joel, knowing how very openly critical they have been of each other. And obviously that happens. You have feuds with different players, coaching staff, whatever, but they are both very strong personalities. And I think I will selfishly enjoy watching him coach Joel Embiid and just watching him butt heads. And I just, at the same time, I really, really, really hate that he swiped Rico Hines, because I was so pumped to have Rico Hines with the Raptors for the one whole season that we had him. I was so excited. Like, we know, obviously, with the Rico Hines runs in the summer, how fundamental that has been to the Raptors development, even before he was an assistant coach for the Raptors. So it also is just that extra salt in the wound of, yeah, he's gone to Philly and he took one of our best assistant coaches with him. It stings.
Yeah. I don't disagree. Now, in respect to the Philadelphia 76ers, not that it was a consolation prize, because I don't think
what we were looking for
or what anyone, how they feel, but we did get one Philadelphia 76er to come our way as a free agent, Jalen McDaniels. I know he's not the only Philadelphia 76er who came off the bench who left the Sixers. We'll see if James Harden is still there when the season starts, but Niang also left the Sixers along with Jalen McDaniels. But what were your thoughts on Jalen McDaniels?
These lack of words or tangible thoughts are kind of reflective of my sentiments towards him.
Right.
Jalen McDaniels is a player that I don't dislike and I don't particularly like. I think I just haven't really formulated a full opinion of him. And he's never a player that really stood out to me ever historically. Again, this sounds very negative, but it's truly not. It's more just kind of lack of awareness of him. So I've been doing my research, watching his highlights and stuff. And I find it interesting that we chose to get another 6'9 guard. Just like, unless maybe because I haven't followed this guy closely, right? Maybe there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. Obviously he's a strong shooter, which we desperately, desperately need. But I'm like, okay, it seems like another copy pasted version of what makes up so much of our roster, which obviously is not enough to get us another chip or even make it through a play-in tournament. So I'm curious to see what he brings. I am nervously, cautiously optimistic. Obviously, I can tell he's an excellent defender, but I feel like defensively we were in an okay spot. It's more the offense that I'm focused on. So, yeah, I feel very meh. Fine. It doesn't particularly thrill me, but I've got to give the guy a shot, right?
Now, I'm curious if part of the reason why he was motivated to play in Toronto is if he wanted to join his old teammate, Malachi Flynn, who was a teammate of his at San Diego State University back in 2018-2019. Because I don't know why he would sign with the Raptors. I'm sure that there are other teams that would want to sign him. Now, you know, maybe, you know, they were able to sell him on a few things, like Vision 6'9". But, I'm always curious about those, you know, college connections and AAU connections that some of these guys have.
Yeah, it is kind of random. I did read earlier today that back before Jalen was drafted, his first ever pre-draft workout was for the Raptors.
Okay, there
so
you go.
He was invited to the Raptors in 2019. We passed on him and we got a total bust, DeJuan Hernandez. I don't blame you if you don't remember the name.
Yeah, I do remember him.
But we passed on Jalen McDaniels and we signed DeJuan Hernandez that year. But so there's also that. Like, I wonder what it was like for Jalen coming to Toronto, meeting the team, the staff, and everything. I like to believe it must have been a positive experience for him if he's he seems pretty pumped on coming back to us. So I don't know. I would wonder about Malachi's input on that. I almost forgot Malachi was still around with us. He had a quiet end to the season after such a dominant summer league performance last summer.
Yeah, there you go. Interesting to go to NBA reference and see how many guys in the league are named Jalen. It seems like the most popular first name in the NBA. I'm not sure if that's because of Jalen Rose, perhaps. A lot of kids, a lot of people watch Jalen Rose play and they want to name him Jalen Rose, but there are a ton of Jalens. In Division I basketball last year, there were 77 Division I players named Jalen.
Just in D1?
Just in D1.
What?
It's very curious to me, how this name is like the new Mike.
I want to know if that's like the most common first name in D1, in the NBA. I have a lot of friends right now that are expecting and stuff, and they're doing all these polls like, what should I name my baby? And I don't really pay much attention to that stuff. Sorry, pregnant people that are listening to this and hearing this. One of those things I'm like, I don't know, pick a cool name. But now I'm going to pay more attention. I'm just going to slide Jalen in there and see what thoughts it gets.
There you go. There you go. Last year, I think there was a dozen NBA players with the name Jalen with different spellings.
Yeah, so that's another thing I was thinking. A bunch of them are coming to mind right now, of course. Jalen Brunson, Jalen Suggs, Jalen McDaniels, I guess I'll add to the list. And then doesn't Jalen McDaniels also have a brother, Jaden, which I feel like is also I'm pretty sure he has a twin. Or maybe they're not twins, but I'm pretty sure that Jalen does have a brother in the league named Jaden.
Wow. Okay. This is yet another thing to look up in these
follow-up.
Holy cow. Yeah, there he is. He plays for the Timberwolves. At least he did last year. I don't know if he was a free agent. He was drafted the year after Jalen. He's 3 years younger. But cool to see, some brothers be able to be in the league. Who knows? Maybe if Jaden is 6'8" or 6'9", he'll be on the Raptors roster by the end of the season. We talked about Nick Nurse leaving. We talked about Jalen McDaniels coming to the team. Obviously, Dennis Schroeder is another new name that is in the ranks. And to a large extent, probably mainly the only reason, although I could be wrong about that, why Dennis Schroeder, the German himself, another international player in the Raptors, came to the Raptors is because of another exit on our team. And I don't know if we've had enough time, enough distance from the moment, but are you able to talk about the departure of our point guard, or do we need a few more weeks?
I do have a Kleenex box next to me. I was trying to emotionally prepare myself for this. Yeah, we can go there. I think it would take a lot of dedicated, like I could spend a weekend away at a retreat somewhere just thinking and processing Fred VanVleet, the man, the myth, the legend, what he means for me individually as a Raptors fan, as a basketball fan, as a human being who bets on themselves. It was very hard, kind of like with Nick Nurse, how he left. Having a guy like this who got us, obviously, was a key part of our championship team, an even bigger part of our G League championship team back in 2017. I know most of us, I don't need to go through the whole story of being an undrafted player, his height, his stature, reaching the level that he has is nothing short of extraordinary. And to see him walk away and get nothing hurts, and that's going to hurt for a long time. And at the same time, he should get that money from Houston. If he is being offered this money and he's in a position to go lead this team to wherever he's going to lead them to, looking at it from that individual standpoint of this guy who was undrafted, he shouldn't be a champion, he shouldn't have a ring, he shouldn't be, like, look at him. A lot of people would argue he shouldn't be in the league, and yet look at him, look at everything he's accomplished, look at what he's done for us. I do wonder if, and I think selfishly, I hope that we got the best of Fred. I look at, again, just his body, the wear and tear, the amount of time that he spent on the court last season and the season before and the season before. I have a hard time believing that 4 years from now, Fred's going to be worth the amount of money that he's being paid.
Right.
But yeah, I think I'm less bitter towards him. We weren't willing to offer him what he was asking for and what other people were willing to ask of him. So I can't really be upset with him for walking away, but it does sting. I'm thankful that we happened to get his doppelganger, Marquis Nowell. I mean, I can at least look to him and pretend it's still Fred, but yeah, it's a lot of complicated feelings. And I think the number one question I'm left with right now that it's been a few weeks since that happened, is Dennis Schroeder our starting point guard? Is Scotty our starting point guard? Like, I don't have a lot of like bitterness or resentment towards Fred, but more just the front office. Like, who is our starting point guard here? What are we doing?
Yeah, that's true. I listened to a great episode of Raptors Republic. Samson Folk was on there. Trey, also one of the co-hosts from Raptors Republic, was on there, and they had Caitlin Cooper, who is from Indiana. She does a lot of analysis and articles on the Pacers. I think she actually should be paid by a team in the NBA. I've tweeted that. I've told her myself that I think she deserves a job in the NBA. She is excellent, excellent at her craft. But they were talking about who starts and who doesn't, and how does the offense get maximized based on their current makeup? And I think this will be a question we will be asking, certainly if the roster doesn't change, until the season starts, because we just don't know what it's going to look like. For me personally, Dennis Schroeder comes off the bench, and I start Scotty and Pascal as the main point guards or ball handlers, distributors, playmakers, because I just think they're that good. And I think they're smart enough and selfless enough that they're willing to play hard away from the ball as well if they weren't the main ball handler, playmaker, decision maker. But I think This is a risky move to go so non-traditional. And yet it kind of goes back to that Vision 6-9. Like, if ever there was an opportunity to double down on it, this could be an opportunity for Masai and Bobby to do such things. What are your thoughts on Dennis Schroeder not starting? And what are your thoughts on Dennis Schroeder's possible impact on this team?
I mean, there's something that you said that immediately spurred a follow-up question for me. So are you seeing the start of this season with Pascal Siakam in a Toronto Raptors jersey?
Yeah, I mean, these are all the, $40 million questions.
Yeah, I don't mean to detract from your question, but just I feel like in order to answer that, saying that it's Pascal?
I will say this. I will say for $43 million, I'm willing to try Pascal and Scotty as our main ball handlers and playmakers than I am willing to pay Fred VanVleet $43 million. And that's no knock to him. I just don't think that he should be the 13th highest paid player in the NBA next year. I just don't think he's that good. I think he is very good, but he's not that good. There's three different ways the Raptors could enter the season. They could stay with the roster that they have and give Darko a legitimate chance. We haven't even talked about Darko yet, but we will get there, I'm sure, whether this episode or another episode. They got to give Darko a chance with a roster that has talent. So I think they could stay the course with this current roster. And I think that Darko could probably make this team better, actually improve their win total than Nick Nurse did last year with Fred VanVleet. Personally, I think that because I think Darko is going to be smarter and less personally ambitious than Nick was. I also think that our team got deeper, and I think Scottie's going to be better. And with having Poeltl for a whole season and Gary having a chance to actually start, I think, I think they'll be better next season than they were this past season. But I could also see them saying, sorry, Pascal, Fred's gone now. Our road has changed and we have to make a turn, and you being on this team, you know, we can't make the turn that we want to take. I can see them going that route. I can also see them doing something crazy, and this will be controversial on the pod. I'm sure I could lose friends for this, but I could see Masai, you know, pulling a huge trade and deciding we're going to forego the Scotty route and we're going to go the Dame Lillard route. And I think that there's some very viable trade packages that we can put together to get Dame. And I think Dame answers a lot of the questions that our offense has and shortens our depth from like 13 deep, and you're guys are fighting for positions and you're not sure, you know, where consistency is coming from with roster makeup, to having three less guys deep and now having a very clear understanding of what our direction is as a team, but who is playing and why. So I could see any of those three, but I'm quite satisfied, to be honest, and maybe this is me being delusionally optimistic, but I'm quite happy and satisfied if we stick with all the guys we have. I think Pascal Siakam is a bona fide All-NBA player. That's hard to come by. There's only 15 to 20 guys who are in that conversation, and no, Bradley Beal is not part of that conversation. And I think Scottie Barnes and OG Anunoby will be fringe all-stars, both of them, this year, meaning they'll be in 40 conversation. And so because they have more room now, because there's one less giant at the top of the food chain, so to speak, that's going to be battling for minutes and touches. So that's my quick take on all that.
Wow, you've left me with a lot to unpack there. This is, again, I could go on a tangent just based on your side tangent. I could talk for 45 minutes. I will say I was ready to disconnect and fake an emergency at the let's move Scotty for Damian Lillard. You did say you might lose friends for it, and I'm sorry, Bryce, but I get where you're coming from, though, too. I don't like drama. And it's the same reason last year with the whole KD for Scotty thing. I don't like a player who is vocally discontent so far as to say that, well, if I don't get traded to the team I want to get traded to, I'm just not going to perform well. You're a professional. You have a job to do. I can understand. It's like looking at myself as a professional. Like if I was boxed in and told, okay, Courtney, you can only go work for one of these 30 companies. Obviously, I'm going to have my preferences. That's human nature. But I don't know. I don't like the potential drama and discontentment and infighting and everything that comes with a player who is so unhappy and so particular about what would potentially make them happy.
Right.
Whereas with a guy like Scotty, even with the Raptors fans who have been so brutal to him, he still has this beautiful happy-go-lucky mentality. He puts in the work. He's playing right now in the Miami Pro-Am League and playing very well. And he looks like he's put on a lot of muscle. And I just see a guy who puts in the work. And he reminds me, like, weirdly, now that I'm thinking of Dame wanting to go to the Heat, he does remind me of that Heat culture of, like, tuning out the noise, not listening to what everyone's saying, and just showing up at the gym, putting in the work, getting the job done. And I like that. And I get it. At the same time, thinking of Dame and what he would bring to the team, I can't disagree with what you're saying. But I don't know. I kind of see him like Fred, where like follow up 4 years from now and we'll look at how Dame's doing and how Scotty Barnes is doing. And then we can rehash this conversation.
No, that's a legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Dame, like he's not old, but he's not young. He's early to mid 30s at this point. Like, I'm just thinking of Scotty's future, and it was the same thing last year with KD. Like, I'm never gonna say KD's a bad basketball player or he's not as good as Scotty or better, but it's more just thinking of the longevity and looking beyond what he can offer in this season. So I don't know. I mean, thinking back to your earlier question of starting, is like, what does our roster look like? I don't know. I feel like it's not setting Scotty up for success to expect him to be a playmaker and expect him to be a point guard of the level that Fred was.
Right.
At the same time, it's not fair to ask that of Dennis Schroeder either.
Right.
And so, yeah, if Pascal does move, trying to identify a player who has that chemistry with Scotty or who can pick up that level of chemistry and reads right off the top, like, that's going to be near impossible. So Pascal's asking for a lot of money, but I think he brings a lot of intangibles to the team as well. Even just the fact that he is Scotty Barnes' favorite player.
Right.
Like, when Scotty was basically growing up, which is so weird because they're so close in age, like Pascal's my age, and Scotty says when he was in high school, he was looking up to Pascal, right?
Yep.
So I'm feeling very old and entering an existential crisis here, but but yeah, I feel like it would impact Scotty as a player if Pascal moves. It would free up more space, as you said, like him and OG would get more minutes, more opportunity, but I don't know if the benefits would outweigh what we would lose with Pascal.
Yeah. I mean, from a chemistry standpoint, obviously with Fred gone and what happened last year, there's, you know, probably some mixed feelings from the players. But when you say, as you did about Scotty loving Pascal as a player, and I think he has a lot of respect for him as a teammate too, from interviews that I've heard. When you think about the chemistry that Poeltl has with Pascal, when you think about, you know, just the work ethic and the want, the desire to be very, very good with Gary and his chemistry with OG, I think there's lots of potential for this team. I think this team is still very much a top six team in the East talent-wise. So I think that's pretty positive. I think give Darko a chance. Give him a chance to compete as a coach in his first role. That's my thing.
For sure. And I will, just on the note of Darko, I have to give him huge credit for Dennis Schroeder being a Raptor, because on the first day of free agency, Darko called him and said, "Hey, I'm coaching the Raptors now. I want you on the team."
Oklahoma City, is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Darko years ago was with OKC. I want to say 2014 to 2016-ish.
Yeah, okay.
And he was specifically responsible for player development. And he helped Dennis a lot during that time. And just, so just, I love the fact that this guy, he's brand new to the team. It was like his third day as head coach, and he's calling up players being like, yo, come to the Raptors. I love that. That instilled a lot of confidence and hope for me. But I just, before we talk too much about Darko, you reminded me of something that you said months ago when we were speaking, and we talked about,
even my daughter doesn't remember what I said last week, and you're saying months ago. Wow, it's respect. Okay, good.
No, it's because you asked me a very poignant question that I ended up, like, I spent nights lying awake in bed trying to formulate an answer to the question you asked. And it was, what is the one thing that the Raptors need above all else? Right. And your answer to that question was depth.
Right.
It's, you know, obviously we need offense, we need help, we need this, that, the other thing, but you said overall this team needs depth. And when you look at our current roster, these moves that we've made with McDaniels, with Schroeder, we've obviously signed all of our two ways with Ron Harper Jr., Down Jr., Freeman Liberty. When you look at this roster, do we have the depth that you said several months ago, I'll remind you now, that we so desperately needed?
I really believe that this team is deeper than last year, partly because certain guys like Christian Coloco, who I've also seen in the weight room looking swole, as they say. I think we are deeper in that regard. We're also going to get back a crafty vet in Otto Porter Jr. Finally, we're going to get to see him play, and I think he brings a lot of balance to the team. I think, you know, even Grady Dick can add depth in a real positive way to the team, and I think Darko will play him. I think Darko will play or at least give opportunity to Jeff Doughton. I don't think the leash that Nick Nurse had is going to be, you know, anywhere near as small for Darko. And I don't think the doghouse is going to be as big as Nick Nurse's doghouse was, for bizarre reasons too. Like guys, you know, not being able to perform and they're in your doghouse. No, like guys should be in doghouses because they aren't good teammates or they're not nice human. Like when Terrence Davis was in the doghouse, that's a legitimate reason for being in the doghouse. When, you know, Malachi Flynn isn't quick enough on his pull-up jump shot coming out of a pick and roll, no, that's not why you're in the doghouse. The guy's in the third year in the NBA, he's drafted during the pandemic. So I actually think that our depth has a lot more possibility than it did last year. And we've added guys, as you've said, like Schroeder, McDaniels, and of course through the draft, Noel and Dick. So I'm actually quite happy with our depth. What do you think?
I am encouraged to hear you say that. I think if I look overall, like very globally, even as I was looking forward to this conversation tonight, when I think about the Raptors season moving towards it, I'm not super pumped like I have been in a lot of previous summers. I'm not feeling like I'm on cloud nine, like, oh my God, I can't wait for preseason. I can't wait for the season to start. I'm like, not in that much of a rush to get there. You know, let's take our time with it. But there are certain things that bring me excitement and joy and enthusiasm. And our current roster is one of those things. Darko is another huge one. But looking at this lineup and just again reflecting on that conversation of the depth that we were painfully lacking, this isn't going to solve all of our problems, but it's certainly going to help knowing that we're not going to have two guys playing 42, 44 minutes a night and then five players just not being played at all. It definitely instills a lot of hope. And I feel like we're in a season where I don't want to be too, I hope this isn't a controversial statement. I don't think we're looking to win a championship this year.
Right.
So why would we not give these guys some minutes and see what we can do with them? And especially a coach like Darko, who is so focused on development, when you have all of this young talent. And like you said earlier, there is so much talent on this team, and there was so much talent last year. We just weren't able to convert it into wins. I think we're in a better position this year to do so.
Yeah. And I really want to continue to discredit and to bust the myth or that 29 years old is old in the NBA. You're literally in your prime, and you probably have 3 years of it. And when people call Pascal Siakam old, I'm just so frustrated by their lack of understanding of how long a guy's career can be, especially when they're at the top. You know, we've seen KD now almost 35. We've seen LeBron, coming up to 39. We've seen Chris Paul play important basketball at 38. And are they as good as they were when they were 35? No. But if Pascal's 29, he still has six really good seasons ahead of him. And for me, when a guy's only played seven, I think six is a long way to go. And so I think this team can still develop individual guys, but as a team, they can still develop. And Pascal, I think, still has a runway to get even better than he has, just like we saw DeMar from 29 to 32 get better at his game and as a teammate. I'm actually quite excited what Pascal's game and what the whole roster's game does under a coach who actually cares about development and not their own, personal ambitions, as I said before.
Their higher ambitions, if you will.
Yeah, Nick Nurse is the new Dragic.
I had to. I'm sorry. It's there's still a lot of bitterness there. But no, I feel the same way. Honestly, like the roster is definitely the same thing. I saw someone call Chris Boucher old yesterday. Like, what? I don't know. Maybe this is where my own existential crisis is coming from. But like, these guys are not old. Like, Udonis Haslem announced his retirement. That's fair. He is a player I think we can say is older and was ready. But as to your point, he still contributed to the Heat when he needed to this season and this postseason. Right. It's not like the guy was useless. So it did make me curious when I saw his retirement statement. I was wondering about that, because obviously that's another Raptors player we didn't see a whole lot from last year, but I don't think it's his fault that we didn't see a lot from him. It's just he wasn't played. And when he was, it was like with 2 minutes left in a game where we were down by 30 anyway. So he's a guy too. Like I want to say he's 37 now. And to me, that means he's still got a lot to offer, but are we going to use that? And I really hope that we do. I hope he doesn't just sit as a bench warmer the whole season again. It would pain me, like just thinking of him as an older guy who's still on a team. He's able to find a roster spot. I don't imagine he wants to sit around doing nothing all season.
No, from everything I hear from him in interviews, he's 35 right now. In June, he turned 35. He probably has a good year left in him as a player. Certainly, he's going to be further down the bench than he was from 2 years ago. But everything I see in him is a guy who loves to mentor and coach. And I feel like he has a chance with this current roster and with Darko as a coach to begin that transition and to be able to like practice while he's not as active a player as he was, again, even 2 years ago, but certainly 4 or 5 years ago. When you see him even as a dad and talk about his kids and talk about their development as people and players, because they both play. Yeah, this is a guy who cares about that stuff. So I could see him taking on a more player coach type role. but I love him being on the roster. I think he gives more depth in ways that we don't have depth because we don't have old guys on this team outside of Thad Young.
Yeah, and I think like if I'm looking at these young guys that are like 19, 20, 21 years old, and the older guy on their team is Pascal and Jakob, who were drafted the same year, like, I don't mean that as an insult or negative towards Pascal or Jakob, but like how much wisdom can you bring when you've only been in the league for a few years more than these guys? So I totally agree. And just as a hopeful side note, I do like to think there's a version of reality like 18, 20 years from now where Fred VanVleet is the head coach for the Toronto Raptors. Talking about a player who has that coaching mentality. And like we saw in the bubble when he was dealing with his hip injury and he was Coach Fred.
Yeah.
I just got to put that on the record right now. I would love nothing more as the wounds have healed. And once he retires from the Rockets and everything. And I don't know. That's a player I could see coaching any team in the league. But man, if he could come back to the Raptors, it would be a beautiful thing.
Maybe he'll be Becky Hammon's assistant coach. Who knows? To start off his coaching career. We did not get to so many topics. We haven't really dove in at all to Darko the man, let alone Darko the coach, and our feelings about him coming to this team. We haven't looked at more specific stuff about our offense or about what our defense can look like with all the players, not just a few names or the starters. So we definitely need to get to that. I even had a question: what are our off-season, wish list? Now that it's about half Christmas or whatever they say in the same time. So we have lots to get to, but I know the hour. I know it's a Sunday. It's a good time to unwind. But Courtney, it is truly a joy. It brings me joy to have a little reunion on the pod tonight.
Absolutely. And let's talk very soon about Darko while the momentum is still so fresh and there's so much to be excited about. As a Raptors fan, I don't think I'm alone in that, really trying to identify things to look forward to and be pumped about. And for me, Darko is one. I won't go on a tangent because then I will talk about him for another 35 minutes, but I will just say I'm really pumped with the direction that we're moving in. I love his mentality as a coach. I loved his first press conference, or one of the first things he said about our players was, "I'm here to serve them." I just think like looking at Nicky Nurse and what we've historically had from coaches, I'm really excited for that fresh perspective, and I think he has a lot to bring, so I'm pumped. Let's talk about him soon at length, and same with our offense, because Lord knows there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah And also possible fashion catwalk participation from guys like Gary and Grady.
Shameless plug, side note, I just ordered my Casey Bannerthin and it is 100% real sequin.
Whoa.
If you watch Draft Night, we're not in Kansas anymore. I ordered it. Casey Bannerman is very close with the Raptors as an organization and MLSE. He's incredibly talented creator, artist, yep. I don't know what fully to call him. He does it all. He also just welcomed a little baby who is healthy and beautiful. Congrats, Casey. But I get a lot of my jerseys from him. I got my Scotty Barnes jersey last season when he was doing super well and still continues to do well. And I'm sure Dick jerseys will be best sellers for several reasons, but I'll leave it to that.
We'll let Twitter have the punchlines for Grady's last name.
We'll leave it to the collective imagination of the internet, which can be a scary place.
Grizzly. Courtney, it's been great. Look forward to chatting with you soon. But do enjoy some of the good weather that comes your way. I'm sure that will happen this week.
Absolutely. I'm going to go check on my pigeon, which again, sentence I never thought I'd say, but we're living in weird times here.
Respect, respect. All right, Courtney, peace. I think I don't do dreaming, boy. I'm on your function.